Dean still hadn't recovered properly from the effects of being drugged, and Christy and Jack tried to keep the doped boy safely between them, watching him every perilous step of the way down. Ryan tried to find a route that would parallel the trail, so that he would have some clue when the villagers were close by, listening for them above the rumbling water. They came quicker than he'd expected, at a point where the climbers were barely a third of the way down. He caught the menacing red glare of their torches bouncing off the branches of the elegant beeches that lined the road. Ryan gestured to the others to flatten themselves against the damp face of the cliff, all of them drawing their weapons. But, as he'd hoped, the mob continued on toward the mansion without a glance in their direction. He waited a couple of minutes, then waved for the others to stay where they were. Ryan climbed carefully up onto the side of the trail. He peered through a screen of stunted bushes, seeing the last of the men from Brampton vanishing around the next gooseneck in the track.
They've moved on. Time to go.
They made good time along the trail toward the Bill, not seeing another living soul. The bridge over the river wasn't guarded, and the Bill seemed deserted. JB glanced at his cron.
Seems like most of the men have gone marching up the hill. Wonder how long before they figure we're not up there and they come running back down the hill again.
No sign of any lights coming back again. And no sign of Melmoth either.
I have to say that Melmoth looked much the sickest of them all. Despite his strength and special powers, he still looked like a single puff of wind could have blown him from this world into the next. It probably sounds stupid, but in some ways, I feel kind of sorry for the family. Made by scientists and forced to carry on such an endless, painful, pointless existence, depending on the DNA samples of others to keep them half alive.
I can see that, Mildred, my dear. Living and partly living. Bleak, bleak. Oh, the horror of dragging out your days and years like that.
Maybe the shock of the others being dead will freak out Melmoth, and he'll drop off the log as well.
Could be. Yeah, could be.
The moon had vanished behind a thick bank of cloud, and the rising wind tasted of rain. The seven friends picked their way along toward the redoubt, passing through a section of the bayou where the villagers had been logging. The path grew narrow, twisting between patches of muddy swamp. The overhanging trees were draped with the white fronds of Spanish moss that brushed damply at the faces of the companions. Ryan led the way into a small clearing.
Look out, left!
Ryan's Sig Sauer swung around. He glimpsed someone coming in at him on his blindside, carrying a weapon that glinted silver. It was a tall, skinny figure, wearing black with a shock of white hair.
Melmoth.
The bullet smashed into the dark shape, sending it skidding sideways and backward. Ryan leveled the Sig Sauer again when Christy grabbed at his arm.
No, lover!
Why?
He saw the answer to his question, lying still in a brief pool of moonlight, like a crumpled toy. It was a young woman, thin, wearing a long black skirt and a white cotton headscarf. A short hafted kindling axe lay on the ground, a couple of yards away from her. Ryan walked over to look down at the dead girl and saw that she was barely into her teens.
Shit. I never saw her properly. She came at me with the axe. I couldn't have...
You couldn't help it, lover. She gave you no chance not to chill her.
Even so, this really sucks.
It was still dark when they reached the entrance to the redoubt. Ryan paused, holding up his hand.
I'll go ahead. Make sure there's no sign of Melmoth. As soon as I think it's safe, I'll call you.
It took him only a couple of minutes to reassure himself that the outer sector was still firmly locked. Unless someone knew the code, it hadn't been touched.
Let's go.
All of them felt uncomfortable, knowing that the oldest of the vampires might still be swooping around somewhere behind them. They moved at a brisk walking pace along the corridors, past the numberless locked doors, until they reached the part of the redoubt that was familiar to them. Once they were close to the gateway entrance, they all began to feel that they could finally relax.
Nearly there.
Well, my dear companions, we have once again fronted the forces of evil and come through successfully. And I do not believe that the dark powers have been so dark or so powerful ever before. Certainly, I can recall no precedent for such wickedness.
Then again, Doc, most times you have trouble remembering what you had for breakfast.
Door's still open, Dad!
The heavy vanadium steel sector had jammed three quarters of the way up, and it still hung there. They all passed through safely and crossed the control room, where the faint smell of damp still lingered, through the anteroom, with the armaglass sector of the gateway directly ahead of them. Everyone bustled through, and all of them holstered their weapons. Dean seemed to have recovered all his sharpness.
Can I close the door, Dad?
No, I'll do it. You sit down with the others and get ready for the jump.
Christy looked around, turning to stare behind them, across the deserted comp control area, with its monitor screens showing endless, ever-changing fields of data.
Anything, lover?
No, I don't think so. I just got that odd feeling of there being something and nothing.
Well, if it's Melmoth, then he's too late. Another few seconds and we're out of here.
Doc went in first, laying his sword stick at his side, stretching his long legs in front of him. Mildred sat next to him. JB stepped in third, avoiding a dried-up mess on the floor.
Could have cleaned up your puke, Ryan. Sloppy housekeeping.
I'll remind you of that next time you throw up during a jump.
That'll be the day, Pilgrim.
JB settled himself beside Mildred, laying his weapons at his side, taking off his spectacles and carefully folding them. He placed them in a top pocket of his coat. He took Mildred's hand in his. Jack went in silently, sitting with the grace of a cat in front of a hearth. Dean looked at his father.
Are you sure I can't do the door, Dad?
No. Sit down, quickly.
Despite the security of being snug in the heart of the redoubt, Ryan still felt a little uneasy. The traitor used to say that an enemy alive meant always checking the shadows. It was true. Christy patted him on the cheek.
Let's hope we find a nicer, kinder place next time.
She sat beside Dean and waited for Ryan to join them. He took a last look behind him. The air was still, though he thought for a moment he heard a whispering of wind. He set that thought away and walked into the chamber.
Everyone ready?
Yes!
Then here we go.
He closed the door and sat cross-legged beside Christy, reaching out to hold her hand.
Do a good jump.
I'll drink to that too, lover. I'll get something to drink.
You see that the notice has gone off the wall of the little room, Dad?
Notice?
The boy's correct, you know. About a show they were putting on here before Skydark. It's vanished.
Ryan felt his brain beginning to scramble. Dean mentioning the note was somehow important. But how and why? Perhaps it didn't matter at all. Though it had to mean someone had been down in the gateway section since they jumped to the bayous.
Ryan!
Christy's fingers squeezed his hand very hard, painfully. She was telling him something. But the jump was almost underway. A silhouetted figure appeared outside the heavy door. Someone tall and skinny, wearing black. Ryan's grip on the present had almost gone, and he was clinging to consciousness by a ragged fingernail. He saw the door opening, closing. A dark figure, white hair. A face close against his, with eyes that leaked bright blood. And skin like paper.
You pay for what you did.
As blackness finally swallowed him up, Ryan Carter's last thought was that his nostrils were filled with the acrid stench of death and decay. Deathlands Bloodlines is a graphic audio production. Deathlands is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 1996, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Karen Carbone, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Demery, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, Michael John Casey, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Johan Detweiler, Greg Reinfeld, and Brian Rogers. Graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.